This is Peace Talks Radio, the radio series and podcast on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. I'm series producer Paul Ingalls, today with correspondent Jessica Ticton. Well, the world is filled with conflict. Now more than ever, we need to think about creative and nonviolent ways to engage others with whom we differ. What is conflict engagement versus conflict resolution? Why are these tools important in our society right now, and how might they be used in our daily lives? Well, on this edition of Peace Talks Radio, Jessica Ticton interviews Jay Rothman, who's an expert in the field of creative conflict engagement and peacemaking. In fact, even though we've been using it for years, we're going to hear that Jay Rothman doesn't actually prefer the term conflict resolution. Rothman founded the ARIA Group, which provides mediation, coaching, and collaborative visioning for leaders in both the public and private sectors to creatively transform complex conflicts. Jay Rothman is a widely published scholar on identity-based conflicts and conflict resolution theory. He served as the founding director of the Jerusalem Peace Initiative at Hebrew University, and most recently was a visiting associate professor at the School of Global Policy and Strategy at UC San Diego. In Jessica's interview with Jay Rothman, he talks about how he felt called to the field of peacemaking and explains some of the tools and techniques he employs to move people out of a place of antagonism and into conversation. In the second half of our program, we head to Yellow Springs, Ohio, to speak with two community members in a town that became deeply divided over a school levy issue. Jay Rothman helped the school board out and the community to listen to each other and find common ground so they can move forward with a plan to upgrade their dilapidated school buildings. Here now is Peace Talks Radio's Jessica Ticton.
We've all been hurt by conflict on one level or another. Jay Rothman asserts that conflict and hurt are part of our social condition, but that conflict can also be a source of tremendous creativity. We can make great discoveries about ourselves and, in so doing, about others. Why do I care so much? Who am I? What are my values? What makes me tick? Conflict can also open this possibility for us to then ask, who are you? What do you care about? Rothman says there's this huge opportunity for connection. He's also very musical and speaks about his work in musical metaphors. He calls it moving from dissonance into resonance. There are solos and duets and synchronization. Once people are resonating with each other, they can move into what Rothman calls integrated problem solving, and from there into action. This is the acronym and the concept of ARIA. Like a song or a piece of music, Rothman makes pieces of peace.
I'm really excited to have this conversation with you today. How did you get started in this work?
So my story begins at age 8. I went to this wonderful free school. It's actually known as the first democratic school in America, called the Antioch School in Yellow Springs, Ohio. It was the laboratory school for Antioch College, founded by Horace Mann, the great educational reformer. And it had this notion that kids were their own best teachers, and the relationships between kids were the ways for them to learn how to problem solve and be good citizens and be lifelong learners. So here's a story of me when I was 8. And I got this story from my then teacher, who was at the time, I think, 85 when I interviewed her, because I thought I was going to write a book about this. I haven't yet. This being my own journey. Why have I done this? So I asked her if she remembered anything, you know, from some 40 years previous. And she said, yes, I do. I said, do you remember anything that might have led me to this path? She said, I do. And she right away, you know, she was married to the school. We were her kids. So I wasn't surprised when she did. She said, you came running in one morning and said, Bev, there is a fight on the tetherball court and you have to do something. And she said, I looked at you and I said, Jay, what do you think you should do? And I said, I don't know. I'm just a kid. And she said, Jay, yes, you do. And I said, oh, maybe I do. I know. Let's ring the bell. So I rang the bell. And no matter how bad we were behaving, we knew that when the bell rings, you come in and you circle up. So everyone came in and circled up, all 20 of us. And I'm sitting next to Bev, and everyone's looking at Bev, and Bev's looking at me. And I say, now what? She says. And she says, you know. And apparently I ran a really good meeting. I helped them engage their differences and helped them sort of come to a peaceful outcome. So I have been called to this and found myself in the third-sider role often. At age 17, I left my small, peaceful town of Yellow Springs, Ohio, and traveled around the world to discover the world. But of course, what I discovered is it's a tough place, and who in the heck am I here, and what am I doing? So I was going to go visit a friend who had come when we were in sixth grade to Yellow Springs. His father was on sabbatical, and he happened to live in Israel. And I say happened because though I was born Jewish, it wasn't particularly, that identity wasn't important. My family was universalist. In fact, we sort of were trained that religion and separate groups were the problem in the world. So I had no interest or no identification with Israel. Nonetheless, my friend was there, so I decided to go visit him. And the moment the airplane touched down, and I started seeing people like my father and talking like my grandfather, I all of a sudden realized, wait a minute, I am connected to this country, these people. But I wasn't very happy about that because that suggested, you know, a kind of a nationalism and a kind of religious identity that I rejected. So I spent time trying to understand it. My two-week visit turns into 6 months. And I'm very conflicted because all of a sudden what I was trained to be, a universalist, is really challenged. But I still believe in it. So how can I believe in both? And also my secularism. And now I believe that I believe in religion too. I believe in all of it. And also I'm confused by the fact that by being a people, we are now by definition in opposition to another people, whose story I also believe. So I'm very confused.
Jay comes back to his hometown of Yellow Springs, Ohio, and begins studying at Antioch College, and decides this is where he wants to integrate these two selves he's discovered, his American Universalist and his Jewish Particularist, as he calls them.
I go back and forth. Am I going to stay and be an Orthodox Jew, living in a yeshiva in a cloistered world, and maybe bringing a little secular enlightenment there? Or am I going to go back into the secular world and bring some of these values of depth, of connection, of community, of song, of identity? And I choose the latter. So a lot of my work is organized around the notion of reflexivity, which is in which we use ourselves as kind of the mirror as well as the lens to understand the world. So I'm going to speak reflexively about how I got into the field, because it was very much a personal identity search, identity conflicts, and then efforts to try to bridge them within myself. And that's my work. Right. My work is about helping people tell their stories, the passionate, often painful, sometimes visionary stories that they can then mesh and merge with other people's stories and create more pieces of peace in our increasingly broken world.
I want to stop here for a minute and say that it was at this moment that Jay Rothman met my cousin, Adina Back. And this amazing occurrence draws a direct line of connection between me and Jay, something we discovered in this conversation. They were both at Antioch College in the late 1970s, and she and my cousin Aaron had a big influence on him. Jay said Adina was the first person he had ever met who was both deeply Jewish and deeply universalist, who was connected to Israel and conflicted by it, and she became a very important person to him because she held these identities so elegantly.
So maybe you can jump to founding your company.
The company was started in 1998. It's called the Aria Group. And ARIA is the acronym that I came up for when I was systematizing the problem-solving workshop approach of Kalman Burton and Azar. And basically what I discovered in working with Israelis and Palestinians is the first thing you have to do is have a choreographed explosion. If you don't do it on purpose, it'll happen when you're not looking. And it's really easy. All you have to say is, what's this problem about? And what they say will be them. And I say, okay, say more. And they say, they do, they are, they behave, you know, so they do an attributional analysis. The other side is who they are, because that's their nature. If I'm aggressive or hostile, it's because they made me so, the situation. That's a vicious loop. Then they'll blame the other side. They may even project some of their own shadows on the other side, and they'll certainly polarize. So that's what happens, and I summarize that as antagonism. So that's the first A for ARIA. Then a lot of the field of conflict resolution. I call it creative conflict engagement. There's some major reasons I do that. One of the main things that we need to do to defang conflict, to make it move from destructive to constructive, is reframe. So if our main frame is, you're the bad one, this is happening because of you, et cetera, et cetera, what's the reframe? The reframe is simple and excruciatingly hard to do. The simple is, why does it matter to me? Why does it matter to you? Not what did you do, but why do I care so much? And that's really hard to do.
And this is still on the resonance?
This is in resonance. And then once we've reframed from antagonism to resonance, the inventions are about the resonance. We're not saying, how do we invent ways to stop hurting and hating each other? That's going to happen. But if we can build more resonance of less fear and more hope, and that's what we start inventing, what I call in pieces of peace, you know, things that are big enough to matter but small enough to work. That means very basic things like better education, like different approaches to learning about each other, like better municipal services in Jerusalem, like more possibilities for encounter with the other side. So very practical, concrete, small things. And then finally, developing an action plan. So that's ARIA. Antagonism, resonance, invention, creative inventions, integrative inventions.
And action is the last step. But what about finding ways to resolve conflict through compromise? There is a common idea in the field of conflict resolution that compromise is the best way, and that's rarely the case when it's identity-based, for example, between Israelis and Palestinians. He lays out three ways of solving problems.
There's really three approaches to solving problems. One is domination. One side wins, the other side loses. That's called lose-win-lose. There's another approach, which is called compromise, where people think, I give up a little, they give up a little. And if it's about material issues, that's right. If it's about identity issues, you can't give up a little bit of yourself. You can expand yourself and therefore be more inclusive, but you can't give up a little of yourself. So the third approach is called integrative problem solving. And so we do integrative invention, where both sides feel like they get more of their needs met and their frustration level is reduced. So that's a good integrative invention. And then finally, we try to sustain it through some kind of action. So that's ARIA, the acronym. ARIA is also a metaphor, and the metaphor is very central to my work. In addition to wanting to be a writer, I also wanted to be a musician, and then I got diverted by this Israeli-Palestinian peace stuff. When I got married, my father-in-law-to-be under the canopy said, I'm so lucky. I have a son-in-law who's going to have lifelong employment. He's going to work on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So before I got diverted into that, I thought I was going to be a writer or a musician. And so ARIA becomes my pathway to reclaim my musical artistry. And also the notion of moving from antagonism, from dissonance to resonance, right? There's all sorts of metaphors. ARIA suggests that conflict is also a source of tremendous creativity, right? Maybe the deepest creativity, right? I don't think you have to suffer in order to be an artist, but you certainly have to know about conflict. And that often suggests suffering of some kind. But ARIA is suggesting it also can be very beautiful and we can make great discoveries. And that, you know, answering that question, why do I care so much, is also answering the question, who am I? What are my values? What makes me tick? So conflict is also this possibility for discovery. And who are you? What do you care about? And this opportunity for connection. And then when we get to invention, right, old things to solve old problems often don't work. We need new ways. So the ARIA metaphor of music, of imagination, of creativity is really important to me. And then finally, I organize my work according to solos. I help people do their own work about conflict. To thine own self be true, and then it must not follow as night the day thou canst not then be false to any other, says Polonius in Hamlet.
This is producer Jessica Tichton for Peace Talks Radio. And I'm speaking with Jay Rothman, an expert in creative conflict engagement and the author of 5 books.
I guess my next question is the distinction between conflict resolution and conflict engagement and that reframe and why that's so conceptually important, but also thinking about success and failure. I know you have thoughts on that failure is part of the process and that it's good. And it's making me think of the musical metaphor when we're thinking about or dance. And choreography and how people come together and dancers are in contact and then moving away and all these different configurations. So I'm having visuals here, but if you could just speak to that, the engagement versus resolution or not versus just what those distinctions are.
Let me start with a somatic example, since you talked about dance and I'm also very interested, engaged with dance. So I created a walking path in my space. I have this gathering space where I bring people for deep retreats. After having traveled a lot for my career, I'm having people travel to me. So I have this space and we've built what I call a synchronous walking path. And in the synchronous walking path, we have people, if they're either disputants or people who are maybe envisioning a future, they walk together in step, straight down, and then it breaks off. And they keep walking together in step, but separately. And that both metaphoric and actual experience of we're together when we're together, and we're also together when we're apart, is sort of the idea of this engagement. And one of the things that's so beautiful about walking in synchrony is that our sympathetic nervous system starts firing in common. And it actually, there's some serious research that it changes attitudes towards each other, not only towards the other individual, but if they represent a group that you're in conflict with, it can actually change your attitudes towards that group. It's kind of mind-blowing. I spend sometimes weeks and months getting people together, and apparently this little 3-minute walk can change me. So I don't know if I'm the bigger sense, but I know in my experience, yes, I take people and they do that walk, and being together is deeply together. And then being apart is also together. And so even when we're in conflict with the other, right, how can we accept this conflict as something which is irresolvable, right? Our identities, our religions, our histories, our backgrounds, our races, our classes, our countries, so many things. And as I said, just two people, me and my wife, we are agonistically different, which means we have radical difference. And you know, hopefully with my wife after 36 years, we've discovered how our differences are also things that we learn from and grow from, and not always easy, but we help them become creative and overcome the ways in which they're destructive. And that's a lifelong process. And so for disputants, it's mostly a sense of acceptance. I accept that we're radically different. I accept we see the world differently. I accept we've hurt each other. I wish we hadn't. I want to do everything I can so that we don't anymore. And that's not resolution. You know, that's just this is our reality. And it's going to be filled with difference and debate and controversy, hopefully not violence.
I ask Rothman, what if the past keeps coming up in a conflict and you want to just put it behind you and move forward?
You can't wall off the past because the past has its way of having its way. And if you can guide the past so that it's not re-stimulating all of the trauma, then it helps you say, this is reality. We can't change it, but we can change our reality, understanding of it, so it doesn't have to condition the next violence. So we can reduce the level of violence and we can increase the amount of cooperation. I'm confident.
Rothman goes on to explain that there are three different fields or schools of thought, and that the first is conflict resolution, then there's conflict management, and the third is conflict transformation. Rothman believes they should all be integrated, and that what we need is to be really careful about our language because not all things we call conflicts are conflicts. He has a contingency model.
And I say, if it's a dispute, we settle it. If it's a problem, we solve it. If it's a conflict, we engage it. I don't use the word management, transformation, or resolution because they misguide us. Right? It depends on the type of conflict and its level of development to determine which type of approach we need to take. The problem with the word conflict resolution is it gives us a false promise. And then failure is almost certain. That we think that we're going to solve problems so they're going to go away and not come back. And then when they come back, we say, what? This is worse. Problem with conflict management is its aim is too low. And it's more of a technical solution. We've been hearing that now that that's sort of been the policy of the Israelis over the decades, and that has led to disaster. You can't just manage, particularly when it's an identity-based conflict. So therefore, when it's a conflict, we have to at best engage them, and that's the alternative to developing an unrealistic goal of resolution and an unhelpful goal of management.
Mm-hmm. It's so common to just refer to conflict resolution as that's what we're always aiming for.
So a lot of failures are we, even if we reach success in the room, how do we maintain success out? And that's way too infrequent. I'd say it's more common for my successes to fail than for them not to. So increasingly I'm working on sustainability from the small thing of come back in 2 weeks to the larger thing of building a culture of what we call conflict positive culture, conflict culture, where you're proactive about having everybody in your organization engage conflict when it's at the resource or goal level and before it gets to the identity level. Because once it gets to the identity level, you can't do it yourself. Then you have to call us. So do your own work so you can get rid of us as mediators. That's our job. We want to do ourselves out of business.
It's like kind of like when you clog the sink or something, or like when you got to maintain and do the right stuff and not pour stuff down the drain. And once it gets really bad and gets stuck, you got to call the plumber.
Right. So failed success. But successful failures are more interesting because, you know, in this work of human relationships and politics and intergroup relations and identity-based conflict, there's never a great, great success that you come out dancing. I mean, at the moment, you might feel pretty exhilarated, but you know what's up, the things you're up against. You know, oftentimes people say, you know, this work that we've just done is just the beginning. Now it gets hard.
This is producer Jessica Ticton for Peace Talks Radio, and I'm speaking with Jay Rothman, an expert in creative conflict engagement and peacemaking, and the author of 5 books.
What are some of the ways that you use some of your own tools in your everyday life?
So I was just mediating between a husband and the wife. I don't do divorce mediation. They're wondering about divorce. If I can't help them and they do want to get divorced, then I'll turn them over to a divorce mediator or a divorce collaborative lawyer. But I will have set them up, I hope, for some useful ways of communicating. And I think they're going to make it. We'll see. But as they were talking the other day, I noticed that every time he asks her a question, they're not real questions. They're sort of statements of a point or a principle. And I pointed it out and I suggested a different way to do it. And he did well and their conversation was better. And then I finished the mediation and my wife asked me a question that was not a question. She was making a statement. And I said to her, "Hey, is that a real question?" And she said, "Oh, don't use that on me." I said, "All right, but how about a real question?" So, you know, when I'm doing this, look, I can be as antagonistic as the next person. And in some ways I can even be more. Because I believe in it. Sometimes I don't censor myself because I believe you have to engage this stuff. Well, sometimes that's not always wanted. So I'd say my family is maybe more contentious and conflict active than many other families, but partly because I think we know how to do it. But we don't always know how to do it, but we're willing to keep trying.
The field is full of people working in peace and conflict resolution. So I ask Rothman what he offers that is different.
One of the things I've been talking with a colleague about recently is how do we scale up? And she said to me that she thought that my work has been an example of scaling up more than other approaches. So I'd say two things. The one is the focus on identity-based conflict, right? I really think that's essential. And talking about how to engage it creatively and how we try, instead of trying to resolve it. The other thing is how do we have a way to scale up from the inside out, right? From the necessitous individual to the coherent group to the collaborative intergroup. I mean, how do we move in that way? So I talk about self-group system and that we have to always be thinking about those levels of analysis. So what do the individuals say, feel, think, suggest? Jessica, I remember there's a woman in a Palestinian Israeli woman who ran a fabulous project among Palestinian Israelis. And it was to help the Palestinian citizens of Israel vision a future of Israel that they would feel like they could really be part of. It was a pretty interesting effort. Israeli Jewish leaders were very afraid of it. I actually was asked by the prime minister's office to help them make sense of it. It was an interesting process. This was probably a tragic example of a successful failure. I asked her, what was this document? What was its value? What was its benefit, both to Palestinian citizens of Israel and Jewish citizens of Israel? What could it accomplish? And she said, really, I can tell you in two words, a 50-page document, you know, 2 years of work, please listen. So, you know, that emphasis on please listening to our identities, to our stories, to our narratives, lots of us are doing that. So yes, and organizing that around identity. But then moving up from this individual voice to the collective voice of the group, and I'll come back to that in a second, and then from the group, you go up to the system. So many people, particularly folks who don't have a deep understanding of identity dynamics in their own lives, who are maybe mostly universalists, like many people in this field are, and like I was as a youth, right? Groups are the problem. Let's get past groups. Let's move to this system, to this universalist reality. Well, that doesn't work, particularly if we're dealing with identity-based conflict. We have to go from the individual, the self, to the group, the collective solo of the group, and then finally the group of groups or the system. So make sure that we pay attention to those three levels in that order. I think that's really essential. And that we figure out a way to scale up. And I've been scaling up a lot with action research tools. right? This asking of people, what are your goals? Why do you care about it? How do you want to accomplish them? It's not because I want to write an article about that, though actually we did a number of them, but rather it's to give them the opportunity to reflect deeply and to be practical about what they want. So I've done that recently in a school board's conflict that we might talk about, where after we worked with the staff and the school board to help them reach consensus about what they wanted and to put forward as a school levy, we then asked the whole community through a survey to respond to the different proposals and to have their voice in there. And so that involvement of individual leadership top down and then the whole community bottom up then led to a successful outcome of a levy campaign that had been failing for years, which is kind of middle out, right? And I think that's a mark of success also. Top-down leadership has to engage this somehow. They have to say, yes, we want to do this, and yes, we need help, and yes, we're working, but we need input. So then community says, here's our voice, here's our values, here's our vision. And then finally, we have the institutions that carry the water. Top-down, bottom-up, middle-out.
And what do you do to relax, or when you've gone through so much stuff and people are putting so much, well, there's a lot of negative energy and a lot of hostility or viciousness. What do you do to let that go?
I walk a lot. We have a woods right near me. I spend a lot of time in that woods. I hang out with my dog, my family. My music is still a big rest. I'm painting these days. I'm painting. That's fun. So artistic expressions, nature expressions, people expressions. And I'm not great at it. I suffer. You know, I just recently heard a Buddhist teaching about the difference between empathy and compassion. And what he said, I'm not remembering this Buddhist teacher's name, but what he said was, if you have too much empathy, you can start identifying with the other person, and then you'll be hurt by their hurts. You'll take in the wounds of the world, and you won't be any good. You'll start burning out. If you have compassion, you know, sort of a Buddhist notion of trying to heal suffering, then you have some detachment. You see it's their hurt and their pain, and you don't identify with it so much. You keep your not objectivity. A mediator is never objective and never neutral. That's one of my bandwagons. We can be disciplined about our bias. And so if we're starting to get, you know, too emotionally involved, then we know that's not going to be helpful. So professionally, we can change that empathy to compassion. Yes, we have to be deeply compassionate. But keeping our detachment, which of course it's hard to do when it's in my backyard, is essential in the mastery of being a third sider.
This program is dedicated to Adina Back, whose life and work profoundly influenced me and my guest, Jay Rothman. She had the gift of listening, a gift that is in all too short supply these days. She modeled it, exuded it, and lived it. Adina was a public historian, feminist, independent radio producer, social justice advocate, writer, and mother. We miss you dearly.
That was Jessica Ticton interviewing Jay Rothman, who founded the ARIA Group back in the early 1990s, to enhance creative engagement with conflicts in nations, organizations, and communities. You can find out more about the ARIA Group, find a list of Rothman books, and to listen to the full interview, find us at peacetalksradio.com. Look for Season 22, Episode 3. Join us next time on Peace Talks Radio when we continue this topic. Producer Jessica Ticton speaks to two community members in Yellow Springs, Ohio, a town deeply divided over a school levy proposal. You'll hear how they were able to overcome years of conflict through peacemaking with the help of facilitator Jay Rothman. That's next time on Peace Talks Radio. For co-founder Suzanne Kreider and the rest of our Peace Talks Radio team, I'm Paul Ingalls. Thanks so much for listening to and for supporting Peace Talks Radio.